What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is June 3rd. Forgot the date for a second. Happy Monday. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. We have a lovely baseball shirt that you guys should consider. We are raising money for the Human Rights Campaign. So go to PitcherList.com. Actually, shop.PitcherList.com. You can check out the baseball shirt. We did this last year. Raised a lot of money for the Human Rights Campaign. I think over $2,500 and about $3,000. So go consider them. 100% of the proceeds to those shirts, we added extra colors, goes to a fantastic cause. Luis Medina, 5.2 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. He earned a gold star because we did not expect him to do this, especially against Atlanta. I watched it, and the line looks good. The performance, not so much. I mean, Luis Medina has always thrown hard. If you remember him last year for the Athletics, he had a moment where he was able to throw secondary strikes. It was mostly with the slider. This one, the slider did not look very good, and his curveball was really the most vicious of the lot, but really it was more of the same of just, yeah, your command is not very good, and I think he got away with a lot in this one watching it. Did not feel like a guy who was just really in control. Even looking at the strike zone plot at the end, I was like, whoa, really? Not really the guy that you feel you should be in on at the moment. I consider him a cherry bomb, and if you want to go after it, by all means, but it's not really something that I feel like, oh no, we missed out on Luis Medina. I hope I could be wrong. It could be one of those things that you come back from the IL and you have worse command and actually settles into place for Medina. But overall, just watching it, I feel like, yeah, this isn't something I necessarily trust. He gets the Jays next. The Jays have been a little bit better as of late, but they are also hot and cold, and that could work if you want to take a chance on it. It's not my favorite play, Luis Medina. Luis Castillo, of course, is going to ace 21 whiffs, and that's always a cool thing. And way to get a co-share of the Gallows pole. Andrew Heaney against the Marlins got a win, 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, all the good stuff. And he had the Blake Snell blueprint in action for the most part. It was against the Marlins. It was a lot of YM lock, that is middle height as opposed to super up, but he did get some super up too. And all the secondaries were down, and that's really nice. Also, 94 pitches from Andrew Heaney is really good, considering he threw 41 in a relief appearance after Nathan Eovaldi. 3 days rest, he was all good for 94. Good to see that. Charlie Morton is a cherry bomb. He did well against Oakland. He had a really nice curveball. That's great. He had 5 walks. He is still a cherry bomb, and that's that. Gavin Stone against the Rockies got the win. 5 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, 6 Ks. 75 pitches. They just took him out after that. Seems cool with me. Slider woke up. 9 for 19 whiffs. It wasn't really the greatest slider from Stone. Down in middle. A lot in the zone. The thing is, though, it would have been strikes either way. They swing, it was a whiff. If they didn't, it was a called strike. They should make contact with it, but nevertheless, it worked out well for Stone. Good to see. I'm excited for him against the Yankees. Why would I be excited? That's a tough matchup. Well, that's right. I want to see Stone actually in that kind of matchup, and I'm just so excited to see what he can do, honestly. We've been seeing Gavin Stone against weak opponents. That's been great. And if he can't handle the Yankees, then we just kind of treat him like that Toby instead. If he does go out there and showcase really good stuff against arguably the best offense in baseball right now, maybe there's something there. You have Lance Lynn against the Phillies, 4 innings, 0 runs. It was 4 unearned. You don't want to do this. Michael King against the Royals, 7 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. He is a dependable Holly in my view. The Royals are also a really good offense at the moment. And he'll get the Diamondbacks and the Athletics next. Michael King, I know he had some problems early on the season with walks. I don't believe that whatsoever. He also had some blow-ups that were really surprising, especially like hosting Rocky Road. I think that Michael King is overall a very good pitcher who is also an efficient one, and I see 4 months ahead of Michael King just being a strong arm for your fantasy teams, 12-teamers, even 10s, even being like a 3.5 ERA kind of guy with a 25% K rate and like a 110, 115 whip. Like, that's there with a good amount of wins because he's going to go 6 innings constantly. Really good for quality start leagues. Griffin Canning against the Mariners, 6.2 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 Ks, came through as our stream pick of the day. Changeup and slider were on opposite sides of the plate. You had away sliders and arm side changeups, which is really nice. Four-seamer went kind of in the middle-ish and split them up. But good to see. Now he gets the Astros, and we are not going to go for that one. Nicole Reagan's ace is going to ace against the Padres. He's really gone into four-seamer changeup for the most part. The cutter is getting removed a bit. Curve, only 2 of those thrown. He did go a little bit more sliders, and they were decent. I mean, he had more effective ones, but really, I'm still missing the Reagans of old of being able to go glove side, cutter, and slider. effectively. It's still not quite there, but yeah, we like to see six innings of six Ks. Seven base runners, 117 whip, as the whip is elevated for Reagan's, and I think it's because his ICRA is just too high. With one earned run against the Padres, pew, 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 and he gets the Mariners next. That's going to be such a fun one because they struggle against fastballs. Okay, Cole Irvin against the Rays, 6.1 innings of 200 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and just 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? You were going for a win. You didn't get it. You got a tough whip, and it's just not really a productive start, for save for that decent ERA, like a slightly sub-3 ERA, and that's it. You get the Rays again a second time this week. Hopefully we see more curveballs from Cole Irvin because he really didn't do that. It was one of the assets for previous successful starts for Cole Irvin. Hopefully that curveball comes back against the Rays. He didn't really throw many of them, just about 10 of them. So about 10% usage, and you want more than that. Nick Lodolo against the Cubs got the win. 6 innings, 200 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and just 3 strikeouts because of curve. Speaking of which, 0 for 19 whiffs. What? Four-seamer was elevated enough to get through the Cubs. Cubs are not that great right now. He's going to go after the Cubs a second time. I think that's going to be better than this one. This was an 8 base runner in 6-inning game. So I'm okay with Lodolo there. Jake Irvin, I streamed him in the Legacy League, and it gave me the win for the week. The Legacy League being, of course, the Pitcherless Staff League. He went against Cleveland, got the win. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. 11 whiffs, 32% CSW. Across 98 pitches. He is a Vargas rule right now, and the Guardians are really good right now as an offense. I watched it, and I just saw a Toby, really. Like, the fastball and cutter and curve are really the main parts of this. There's some sinkers in there, I guess, too, I think. But it's just a lot of pitches around the zone, and sometimes you just watch a pitcher, and they're just kind of throwing around the zone enough, and they're not really making all these waste pitches. And there's something to be said about throwing just generally competitive pitches constantly, right? Just throwing around the zone and not big waste pitches. And that means that batters are on their heels a little bit more often. You're generally throwing around the zone. Every single pitch could be something, kind of, instead of these easy, relaxing, like, okay, cool, it's either going to be a waste pitch or not, and you improve the confidence on them. And I think that's kind of what this whole Vargas rule thing is, just about being able to throw strikes and being able to not throw too many mistakes. Jake Irvin's curveball had some really nice moments, but it also had a lot of mistakes in the middle of the zone, and I think he got away with those. But he's in as good of a place as we have seen. I just think of him as a Toby, though. And if you really want to go after this Vargas rule, go ahead. He gets Atlanta next. I think he's getting very fortunate. Jake Irvin, I know I just keep saying this, but like, it's just that. It's just a Vargas rule to me. So I'm not really in, unfortunately. It's been really kind of wild, though, how good he's been. Since like 600 runs over those like 5 starts or something stupid like that. Casey Mize against the Red Sox. 4 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 4 walks, and 4 kicks. Not that good for Irvin, but it's been good. Now, Casey Mize, it's so close because his 4-seamer, if you remember, like in the beginning of this bad trend, it was 93 and change. That was the game against the Jays. I think it was that one, or maybe that was 95. And regardless, he's been worse with his 4-seamer. This was a lot better. This was 96.2 sitting that. And it was located up. Now, it was a little too far up. It wasn't like the top third of the zone, just bam, 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 thank you, ma'am. And his slider is getting strikes. But the 4-seamer being out of the zone too much, the splitter not really being good. And I keep wish casting that the slider is going to be a legit whiff pitch, and it really hasn't. So those are the two aspects that are missing now from Casey Mize. He's trying to go upstairs, which is good, but you need to actually hit that better. You do have good shape overall still with this 4-seamer. Really good extension, solid flatness, good IVB, and of course you have the velocity, so it's all there. You need to have that slider that is better. And maybe I'm overlooking that aspect for Casey Mize. Maybe it's just a cutter that works or something along those lines. Maybe you tighten it up and turn it into a cutter. I don't know. But Casey Mize needs something else to really complement this 4-seamer. And of course, he needs to locate that. So I'm going to leave him on the wire until we really see it. But there is something there that is still not being taken advantage of or tapped into for Mize. And I hope he gets there. We have other guys, of course, to talk about from yesterday. Hunter Brown had an absurdly good start. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. Before we get to Hunter Brown, I got to talk about Zach Littell against the Orioles because he went 6 innings of 300 runs and 12 base runners and 2 strikeouts. I love doing this. If you guys don't know, I have the poor quality start, which is exactly six innings, exactly 300 runs, and exactly exactly three runs. If it's exactly nine base runners, it adds a V for a very. And then every base runner after, I add another V. I have not done the very, 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 very poor quality start. That is 12 base runners and exactly 6-3 the entire season, which is pretty fun. Anyway, Zach Littell against Orioles. You don't do that. He's a Toby. Going against Orioles, you don't do it. So he gets them again. You don't do it. Hunter Brown against the Twins gave you a poor quality start, like 6 innings, 300 runs. But six base runners, that's a one whip and seven strikeouts and a King Cole. What? 37% CSW for Hunter Brown. This was the best start I've seen from him all year. He had increased velocity across the board, about one tick up on the fastball, two on the curveball. He had actual pitch separation. Four seamers were upstairs, and you had secondaries that were pretty much down, splitters and curves. There were also some decent cutters getting some strikes in there too. Oh, has he unlocked something? Probably not, because Hunter Brown has wrestled with his command for a long time, but maybe he has, and it's the Angels next. So what I love is seeing interesting things from these waiver wire guys that we know have higher ceilings ultimately. And I love being in a situation where they show up for one start, and then the second start, the one that follows, is against a poor offense. That means A, you are going to maybe jump in for the spec out of the trend continuing, but B, the floor is not as bad as it is against a good offense. So that's a fun ad to see where Hunter Brown is. And remember, in the preseason, he was in my top 50. He's someone that was a 25 to 30% strikeout rate arm, Hunter Brown. And maybe he's getting back to that. I mean, this was 7 Ks and 6 innings here with a 37% CSW against the Twins, who are going to get better now with Royce Lewis returning, but they have not been a rollover offense. Freddy Peralta against the White Sox, 21 whiffs for Gallo's pole, co-share of that with Luis Castillo. 5 innings, 300 runs, though. Oh, 5 base runners, 7 Ks, just a little annoying. He just missed a little more up and arm side with all the heaters, and then the one fastball, the home run, was actually up and away to DeJong, and like, what? Come on. Chris Bassett against the Pirates, 5 innings, 300 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, not the ratios you expect, but you got 7 Ks, and you got the win, and you got singled out. I mean, yeah, he threw sinkers down the middle of the plate, as he does, and the Pirates actually looked for them and hit them. Okay, so it goes. He gets Oakland next. We keep going with Chris Bassett. Blake Snell left his game with a groin injury. However, he threw a ton of pitches first, nearly 100 of them against the Yankees. 4.2 innings, 300 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, 7 Ks. It was already a situation where he felt like he was going to get pulled. Expect an IL stint for Snell. And here's the thing, at the beginning of the season, actually back in October, I ranked Blake Snell low at 33. This is not me saying like, oh, pat on the back, whatever. The whole conversation was generally Blake Snell is a slow starter. And also, he performed at such a level in those 4 months that is just not easy to replicate. Of towing the line so much, of this high walk rate, but really low hit per nine, the lowest mistake rate, etc. And it takes time every year for Snell to kind of get into that. So drafting him is, you knew it was going to be a hipster. Headache-inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster. Thing is, he got delayed early on, got an injury, came back, injury, right? And you might have to wait until like August 1st for this. I don't know how long he's going to be out with his groin injury. Could just be like 2 weeks. Could be nothing, but I expect an IL stint from Snell. And then there's going to be a couple starts of him getting back in rhythm. Maybe it's just one or two. The thing is, at some point, Snell will go on that run. But you got to ask yourself, is it worth it to hold on to him for that later production, right? For me, not really. If you have too many IL spots, it's just like, I don't know, burn the ham two in the bush. If you're in a head-to-head league, you hold on to it because that would be September by then. It's really, really tough. So it's always about your situation. Obviously, 15-team is a totally different conversation. Shallower ones, to chase the upside later, there's always something to go and chase. Nestor Cortez against the Giants, 4.1 innings, 300 runs, 7 hits, 0 walks, and 7 strikeouts. And his inefficiency was, oh, drove him out of this game. Unfortunately, he just filled in the strike zone with all these four-seamers and didn't really locate well. A lot of the stuff was hit out of the yard that were low fastballs. And as you know from Nestor Cortez, he loves being up, not down. So that is not the Cortez that you want. Simeon Woods-Richardson at Houston, 4.1 innings, 300 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. He wasn't the Anthony DeSclafani thing that we saw last time, which was the sliders all over the plate, and then fastball sporadic. No, this was actually more neckbeards, pitch separation, all that kind of stuff. Tried to be nimble for the Astros, didn't quite work, but it was only 66 pitches, and they pulled him because it was the third time through the lineup, which I kind of hate. Just let him try it. He's got enough pitches for it. I hate that the Twins are so in on a third time through the lineup, especially for the younger guys. I do get the sense that Semien Woods-Richardson isn't allowed to see the third time through the lineup a ton, which means that he's not really going to go six innings often. He gets the Pirates next, probably going to go like five innings there. It's not a bad stream. It's just, yeah, I want someone who can do a little bit more than Semien Woods-Richardson on my team. Jose Quintana versus the Arizona Diamondbacks, four innings, 300 runs. Womp, womp. It's just was not the typical Quintana. The four-seamer wasn't really there, so he just went all low with his pitches instead of getting anything upstairs. Just kind of weird. I'm not a fan of Quintana right now. Austin Gomber returned. Remember, he had that elbow injury, so he was delayed like a week, and he faced the Dodgers, and it was terrible. Because, yeah, duh. Now he gets the Cardinals and Twins, and maybe he gets back into that groove, but there's no way that you're going to trust that he does that, even though they're away from Coors. Brian Bello against the Tigers. Unfortunate start here because his changeup just wasn't good. It was around like a 50% strike rate, I should say. Went against the Tigers, 6.1 innings of 4 runs, 8 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks. Unfortunate. I think that the changeup should be better. Slider is still very dependable right now for Bello. He's in a good place with that, which is kind of shocking because usually you just expect the sinker and changeup, and the slider being the one that's messed up. He's really gotten to a good groove with the slider. I think the changeup will come back, and you're going to have this really nice complete pitcher moving forward. And he gets the Cy Sox next, which is very nice. You definitely want to start everybody against the White Sox. You have Brandon Pfaadt against the Mets, 6 innings, 4 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 8 Ks. Great to see the strikeouts because he has a really good sweeper, but against lefties, he doesn't have as much success. And yeah, being sweeper and four-seamer sinker, you really need a proper number 3 pitch. Yes, I say like 2 fastballs and a secondary is really 2.5 pitches. That's how I see it. You need a proper third pitch or real secondary outside of the sweeper. So until he has that, he's just going to be a bit of a cherry bomb. That's just kind of how it is. You have Trevor Rogers against the Rangers. Didn't really go well. He did have good four-seamer changeup separation, but the slider needs to be better. Tymon Walker against the Cardinals, 5 innings of 4 runs. And yeah, he's just... he even actually had decent overall command and approach here. And it's just, you didn't do well against the Cardinals. Just stop going after Tymon Walker. The next game, by the way, for both the Quintana and Walker are in London, and you are just completely avoiding that game. Don't just, that whole series, it might not be Ranger Suarez, because remember, Ranger Suarez had the comebacker to the hand, so his hand might be swelling. They might go with Spencer Turnbull there instead. You don't want to go Turnbull. You don't want to go Tymon Walker. You don't want to go Sean Manaea. You don't want to go Jose Quintana. Just avoid all of them for that series. And you have Quinn Priester against the Jays, 4.2 innings of 4 runs. We did see the slider looking better, but that is it, and no, thank you very much. You have Carlos Carrasco returning from the IL against the Nationals, and it didn't go well. Of course, it was like an IL still ill, you could even say, and Carrasco hasn't been that good, and whatever. He gets the Marlins next, and maybe he goes 6 innings again. I don't really want to do that. Two more that are very interesting here. One is Ben Brown, who went against the Reds. If you remember, last start was 7 innings and 10 strikeouts with no hit ball, 2 walks, 93 pitches, and he didn't go to get his no hitter. Sure. But 5 innings, 5 earned runs here, 7 base runners and 6 Ks. And you kind of expect there to be regression after getting pushed in the previous one. 93 pitches was pushed for Ben Brown. You didn't really want it to be 5 earned runs, of course, and you were going to hopefully believe that he was going to build off of it. But it's not too shocking. I think there is a little bit higher percentage for this to go badly after that kind of game for Ben Brown, which it did here against the Reds. Now, here's the thing. I've comped him to a worse Michael Kopech. And I mean by Michael Kopech, when he was starting for the White Sox, had an electric four-seamer, had a good slider. Ben Brown has a hard four-seamer, just not as good of a shape, which means it shouldn't really get a ton of whiffs on it. And then the curveball is, I think, a little more reliable than Michael Kopech slider is, but pretty much it's a similar situation without that amazing swinging strike rate on the four-seamer. And because of that, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't add up to me as a reliable starter for Ben Brown. So you can keep going after it, but until he really has a third pitch, it really is the curveball show with four-seamers that hopefully don't get hit enough, right? That's not it. Nick Nastrini against the Brewers. This is so funny. I know he's looking so bad on paper. This is a perfect example to me of how any projection system or just looking at the numbers of performance is just missing the entire point. Because Nick Nastrini has been horrendous. absolutely terrible, cannot throw strikes, all of that. Four innings, four earned runs, three hits, three walks, one K. In some ways, he has a tiara that is a turn it around right away. And what I mean by that is I have seen Nick Mastrini actually be able to command his four-seamer. And it's not like in the Joe Boyle scenario of like, oh, it's never going to be, it's always going to be a scatter plot. He has bad, maybe he can get it into the strike zone this one game, whatever. No, I actually think that Nick Mastrini has showcased legit command in his career. But what's going on is that he's in the majors right now. And he's really, I mean, honestly, like the first year being in the majors can really mess with you. So command is all over the place. He can't, he's getting the yips, I think, with his four-seamer at the moment. But its shape is amazing. Elite IVB, good flatness, good extension, velocities there. Like, this should be an amazing four-seamer at the top of the zone. So I think that there's going to be a moment that Nick Mastrini is going to click. And when he gets over the yips, he finally just gets in into that groove. And we're going to be waiting for him when he does. So just be aware of Nick Mastrini. If you're in a dynasty league, now is the time to buy low, especially if it's a very deep one. I think it's going to be there for Nick Mastrini eventually. Looking forward to today's and tomorrow's games. There's no updates, I think, for today, which is pretty nice. It's everything that was yesterday. Matt Waldron is our stream pick of the day. And there's also Tyler McGill, and there's also Tyler Anderson. And hopefully those guys do good things, because we want every pitcher to be dope. Okay, looking forward to tomorrow. We have Tyler Glasnow, Corbin Burns, Shota Imanaga, George Kirby, Max Fried, Ryan Pepio, Luis Heel. All these are auto starts. You also have Jesus Luzardo against the Rays, Seth Lugo against the Guardians. I'm actually very worried about that Seth Lugo start, but I understand completely. No one is benching Seth Lugo right now. I do wonder if that's the one where everyone goes, uh-oh. Okay. Jack Flaherty against the Rangers. The Rangers aren't as hot right now, and Jack Flaherty has been so good. Jared Jones, probable start as well with Jack Flaherty starting off that tier against the Dodgers. I think that Jones did not look nearly as bad as the line suggested against the Tigers. I'm amazed that he didn't get a single fastball whiff, but the stuff is there. So I still want to start him against the Dodgers. I understand if you don't. Christopher Sanchez against the Brewers. The Brewers have been really good as an offense, but Sanchez did throw 96 last time, which is kind of nuts. You have Cutter Crawford against Atlanta. Atlanta's not looking good as an offense, even though Cutter Crawford's not been doing well. I would go with that still. And Spencer Arrighetti is our stream pick of the day. I just really hope he can throw high four-seamers in the zone. Everything else is there except that, and it has really good shape too and should work out. It's like Zach Wheeler's four-seamer without the command right now. Please do it. Okay. I guess the Cardinals too, which aren't a scary offense. Questionable starts here. It's weird to have Bailey Ober here, but it's against the Yankees, and the Yankees are just so good right now, and Bailey Ober has had a home run problem. It just kind of fits of like, I'm terrified of that one, so if you want to just play it safe there, you might want to. Patrick Sandoval could arguably be in the other tier because it is a really nice season for him so far, say for two games. Maybe three if you want to say the 4-run run and 11-hit game, absolutely, but it's really two clunkers of 15 earned runs combined that have ruined Sandoval's overall numbers. I think he's actually doing pretty well with the changeup and the slider right now, so maybe that does work out against the Padres, but it is a bit of a cherry bomb scenario. Dane Dunning gets the Tigers, not a bad matchup, but he's just not that good of a Toby. Same with Mitch Spence against the Mariners. Tristan McKenzie, is his elbow okay or not? I don't know. Gets the Royals, who are kind of good. I don't really want to do it. Trevor Williams, never Trevor, but you understand, of course. He's done well results-wise. His pitches are low and all of that. I don't want to start Trevor Williams, though. I don't want him on my teams. We have Kyle Harrison against the Diamondbacks. As a do not start tier. You could put him in questionable. People are like, what are you doing against Kyle Harrison? What? We love him. He's really pedestrian. The ceiling is not very high. He's not doing anything new either. He's one of those cases of guys where I just don't expect them to take another level. So if I'm going to start him, I want to feel a little bit better about just the overall ratios. And I think it's just too volatile without enough of a ceiling. And I don't really think there's just going to be something that is new in this one. Like, he does what he does, which is four seamers, which are up in more arm side than they should. And then sliders, or really curves and changeups that are maybe around the zone or maybe not. And that's it every single game. I'm done with this. David Peterson had one game against the Dodgers returning back from hip surgery. He now gets the Washington Nationals. I don't know how good he's going to be. He wasn't very good against the Dodgers. I mean, I think it was like 200 runs, but he just didn't look very effective. The slider was not the big whiff pitch. It is the Nationals now, not the Dodgers. I don't know what we're going to get. I think he's still in the do not start tier until he shows us something. Blake Walston is a Toby, or at least trying to be one, from the left side against the Giants. Maybe that does work. It could scrape six innings together. I don't really want to go for that. Adam Mazur is making his MLB debut for the Padres. Should he be a spec ad as he goes against the Angels? Well, at the very least, this is not a start because MLB debuts. I don't like doing that, even though it is the Angels. I don't really think that Adam Mazur is that interesting. I don't really think he does that much. And he's not really one of those guys that go, oh my gosh, I'm the one that got Adam Mazur. I don't really feel like you're going to be doing that. So I'm not really in. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll leave with him tomorrow. We'll see what happens. Andre Pallante, he's a four-seamer guy that's really a cutter with a sinker as well. The slider and the curve, if one of those really click in, Andre Pallante actually has some interesting stuff, kind of looking like a Rasmussen Ashcraft type. It's against the Astros, though, so I don't want to go for that. But there might be an interesting stream for him over the weekend, which is something that you might want to jump in on now, or maybe just wait for this one, and if that works out, then you get him for the Sunday game. Frankie Montas against Rocky Road. I mean, not Rocky Road, I'm so sorry. Inside of Coors, you can go six innings, so at least he's got that. Chris Flexen, no thank you. Colin Ray against the Phillies, no thanks. Ty Bloch against the Reds in Coors, no thanks. And Bowden Francis is returning to the rotation against the Orioles, and how long is he going to go and all of that, so no thank you. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for supporting what we do. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low, and your strikeouts high.